This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhibi in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
This is something that needs to be done in the middle of the crisis so that we can prevent things to become worse in the near future. We are all witnessing in every country of the world the risk of an economic turmoil that will affect people.
That's the director of WHO's Department of Health and Substance Abuse on the need to deal with mental health issues caused by the coronavirus pandemic. Details coming up also. Burundi has expelled the whole World Health Organization team responsible for supporting the country against the coronavirus. We have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. The United Nations is calling for mental health care to be given to millions of people suffering psychological distress for fear, loneliness, economic upheaval, and any abuse triggered by the COVID-19 pandemic. A UN policy brief, COVID-19, and the need of action on mental health, issued by UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, explores the issues brought about by the crisis and offers recommendations. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
National surveys carried out this year reveal widespread prevalence of distress in populations, with levels as high as 35% in China, 60% in Iran, and 45% in the United States. Similar studies among healthcare workers find anxiety levels have risen an average of 45% in countries such as Canada, China, and Pakistan. Devorah Kestel is director of the World Health Organization's Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse. She says measures must be taken now to protect and promote care for such existing conditions.
This is something that needs to be done in the middle of the crisis so that we can prevent things to become worse in the near future. We are all witnessing in every country of the world the risk of an economic turmoil that will affect people.
Kestel says mental health problems have surged during similar economic crises in the past, leading to high rates of suicide. One of the major recommendations in the UN Secretary General's policy brief is to ensure mental health and psychosocial support are widely available in any emergency. What may be feasible in rich countries may not be possible in the developing world. For example, WHO notes 1 in 5 people in South Sudan has a mental health condition, with only one professional available for every 4 million people. Kestel tells VOA that the WHO and other agencies have been working for years to strengthen the capacity of non-mental health professionals to provide care.
We are promoting the modalities where the community, some community leaders or sectors within the community, such as traditional healers in some contexts, could receive the basic knowledge and training that is needed in order to provide care to those in need.
The United Nations says psychological trauma will remain after COVID-19. The disease caused by the coronavirus is gone. It urges nations to reform, strengthen, and invest more money in their mental health care systems. It says these services will be needed to support societies as they recover from the terrible consequences of this life-changing event. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Truck drivers from across East Africa are stranded at the Uganda-Rwanda border. The drivers say the guidelines set by Rwanda's government to help control COVID-19 infection in the country are hard to pass. The drivers, who have endured days away from home, also decry stigma by communities that view them as COVID-19 positives who could spread the disease to them. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
For 3 weeks, a traffic jam has been growing at the Uganda-Rwanda Mirama Hills border post as truck drivers from across the East African Community, EAC, can't cross into Rwanda. With truck drivers seen as high-risk COVID-19 carriers, Rwanda has asked them to hand over their vehicles to Rwandan drivers in a system of relay driving. The other option is to offload merchandise onto Rwanda trucks. The drivers have refused, saying they have no authorization from their employers and could be held liable for any lost merchandise. Benjamin Ngugi is a trucker from Kenya.
But we, like drivers, we don't like that thing of handling the truck to the other drivers from Rwanda. So we're just requesting if we can be allowed to proceed to Rwanda, it's okay.
As if the long wait is not enough, the truckers say they can't get medical attention, food or sanitary facilities from nearby communities due to stigma. Muhammad Ali is a trucker from Tanzania.
They are calling us Corona. We are not Corona. And we have all even certificate we have on the vehicle, but they still they were calling us Corona. Why?
Ugandan authorities in the area occupied by truckers insist their presence poses a huge threat of coronavirus spread. Francis Mujiche is an area legislator.
They are gathering, they are becoming many. It has created jam, traffic jam, but also they are interacting with the people who are serving them food. We don't know their status.
George Bakunda is the resident district commissioner of Untungamo district, where the truckers are parked. He says if Rwanda doesn't allow the truckers in quickly, they will be moved to gazetted parking areas.
These drivers are becoming a bit of a challenge for us to manage, because these are the people, some of them we are not sure of their corona status. If that issue cannot be solved within a short time from now, then we should go in and withdraw these trucks from that Mirama Hills border and locate them to designated parking area, exclusion areas which have been identified.
ESC heads of state, including Yoweri Museveni of Uganda, Paul Kagame of Rwanda, Uhuru Kenyatta of Kenya, and Salva Kiir of South Sudan, agreed yesterday on double testing of truck drivers. They will only be allowed to drive through the ESC upon testing negative in their country of origin and at the border. They also agreed to adopt a harmonized system for the certification and sharing of COVID-19 test results and other information. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
With the number of COVID-19 infections rapidly rising in South Africa and many foreign nationals facing a bleak future due to lockdown restrictions, Zimbabwean nationals have launched an initiative to cushion each other from the impact of the restrictions. The initiative under the banner Zimbabweans United for Progress include technocrats, specialists in a number of fields, activists, politicians, lawyers, and others. Leaders of the initiative have offered assurances that it will be kept nonpartisan and apolitical. Tusoko Malo reports from Johannesburg.
Kenneth Mandaza, the head of public relations for the group, says this is an initiative for and by Zimbabweans. He says they want to help thousands of Zimbabwean migrants directly affected by COVID-19.
The assistance we seek to provide will be distributed in the form of virtual vouchers for those who need food assistance. And in the case where we receive assistance or donations in the form of food parcels, they will also be distributed in that form to the people who need food assistance.
Mandaza says many have been out of work since a national lockdown began on the 26th of March. This has left them hungry and without money to buy basics or pay rent. Those who have been lucky to return to work when lockdown were eased are working half their normal shifts and struggling to make ends meet. Thousands of those working as waiters in restaurants and hotels still can't go back to work. Mandaza says his organization will approach donors, funders, banks, humanitarian organizations, and other sources of assistance.
For businesses, small businesses that have been affected by COVID-19. A revolving fund is being put in place to ensure that we support at least 5,000 of these small-scale businesses in resuscitating them. And this revolving fund will continue to build on until we produce something bigger for our country.
Zimbabweans have welcomed the initiative. Ngabuto Mabena, chairperson of the Zimbabwe Community in South Africa, NGO, says many Zimbabweans are already struggling to support themselves here and their families back home.
We know that the majority of our people work as construction workers, in restaurants, as domestic workers in the security sector. This time they are not at work, meaning they are not receiving any income, which means they are in need of food parcels.
However, Canisius Ngala, a member of ZAPU, one of the political parties in Zimbabwe, says they are concerned that a number of political parties and civil society organizations from the Matabeleland regions have not been invited.
If you are to talk inclusivity, we know each other. We have met as organizations. Each and every organization knows the leaders of each of the organizations that are there. So I wonder what criteria was used to select. And I would like to say that the idea was good, but it will never be successful, because to me, if they want that to be inclusive, let it be inclusive enough.
The Zimbabwean consulate in Johannesburg recently reported that close to 6,000 Zimbabweans have applied for assistance ranging from food handouts to voluntary repatriation. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
In Senegal, during the Muslim holy month of Ramadan, the majority Muslim population normally rushes to bakeries to buy bread for breaking the daily fast. The coronavirus raised the risk of crowds at bakeries spreading the virus, which has more than 1,270 confirmed infections and at least 13 deaths in the West African nation. To halt the pandemic, the government banned selling bread at shops and launched a delivery assistant program called Sell Me Your Bread. Estelle Nganjo, report from Dakar.
The coronavirus lockdown has hurt many businesses in Senegal, but bakeries are still booming as the Muslim majority nation breaks the daily fast for the holy month of Ramadan. Authorities closed most bakeries in Dakar to walk in traffic to prevent crowds from forming and spreading the coronavirus. Instead, Dakar residents are getting their bread loaves from a delivery program in the capital called Sell Me a Bread. Papa Amadou Sarr leads the Rapid Entrepreneurship Delegation, the government organization that manages the program.
You have a platform where people go online, book the bread, or phone numbers where they call to order the bread 2, 3, 4 hours prior to the time for breaking the fast. And the young entrepreneurs that do the last mile delivery go pick up the bread and deliver it to the families and households everywhere in Dakar.
The program also gives loans to support delivery companies like Ubanda Express, which hired 10 more people to meet the demand. According to Umar Bass, co-founder of Ubanda Express, they are receiving a very large flow of calls for this project, and so they have gained competence. He says they are constantly thinking of suitable equipment to be able to meet the demands of the Senegalese, because the issues of bread is very sensitive in Senegal, as the Senegalese are pretty good consumers of bread, especially during Ramadan. Bakery customers have welcomed the delivery service. Ajatun Jai, a customer and grandmother of two, says with the coronavirus, now they are all confined and it's better to stay at home. This is an initiative that is really welcomed, she said. Dakar's Sell Me Your Bread program is being tested throughout the month of Ramadan. If successful, authorities plan to extend their services across Senegal for as long as the coronavirus remains a threat. Estelle Janjo for VOA News, Dakar.
Books are back on the market as South Africa slightly eases its lockdown restrictions to allow the sale of educational items. Booksellers in the nation's literary capital, Johannesburg, intend to interpret old books, including thrillers, fantasy, and romance novels, as educational items. VOA's Anita Powell catches up with a prominent Johannesburg bookseller and a few South African writers who explain why they believe old books matter.
For bookseller and writer Griffin Shea, South Africa's 35-day total lockdown made for a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad month. Just a week before the lockdown started in late March, he was putting the finishing touches on his downtown Johannesburg store, Bridge Books, which specializes in African literature. Then, everything shut down. Sales plunged 90%. The entire industry suffered. Two major South African magazine publishers went out of business in recent weeks. Now, as South Africa begins to slowly ease the lockdown, books of educational value are allowed for sale. Most booksellers are taking a very liberal view of that, because, as a recent open letter signed by thousands of prominent South African writers and intellectuals argues, all books have educational value. Shea agrees.
So under this Level 4 restriction, we're supposed to only be selling educational books, which is not defined. But for example, at my son's school, they don't have set reading anymore. They go in and propose what they want to read to the teacher, and the teacher approves it. So basically that means we need to be able to sell all novels and all poetry and all long-form nonfiction if we're going to let people read what they need.
Shea says he's had no problems from the police since he relaunched internet sales this week. Actually, he says a few officers have stopped by his store, checked on his hygiene measures, and then bought books. This reporter, who is an avid reader, also took the opportunity to immediately order a stack of volumes for delivery, including a novel by talented South African writer Ivan Vladislavich. He teaches creative writing at a local university and was one of the letter's more than 3,300 signatories. Vladislavich.
For me, the book is still the most vital carrier of the human story in all of its complexity and diversity. And I think it's very important in these times when people are separated from one another physically and societies are under extreme stress. I think that the windows that books open onto the world become even more important.
Vladislavich says books have been essential to his lockdown experience. He says he's recently been immersed in a gripping new dystopian novel by prize-winning South African author Barbara Adair. But why actual printed books? Writer and activist Eleanor Sisulu runs the Puku Children's Literature Foundation and notes that in highly unequal South Africa, physical bound books are still vital and should be widely available.
Yeah, physical books are important because some people don't have electricity, they don't have data. They can't share easily. We've got older people who don't have the Kindle or Kobo or Apple. So I don't think it's an either or. I think there must be a space for both. I love my Kindle. I mean, my Kindle is like a person. If I lose my Kindle, I get distraught. So it's important to me, but I think the physical books are just as important.
Griffin Shea says he hopes that this 35-day book drought might even inspire bigger change in South Africa, like elimination of sales tax on books. In his view, they are essential goods, just as much as food and clothing. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Burundi has expelled the whole World Health Organization, WHO team, responsible for supporting the country in its response against COVID-19. A Burundian official has told AFP on condition of anonymity that the country's health minister has totally excluded WHO, accusing it of unacceptable interference in its management of the coronavirus. The African Centers for Disease Control and Prevention described the government's move as unfortunate at a time when greater cooperation was needed to tackle the virus on the continent. According to Reuters, the expulsion of the national head of WHO and three members of his team is happening at a time when Burundi is in the process of conducting a presidential election campaign despite health risks from the pandemic. The election on May 20th is to choose a successor to President Pierre Nkurunziza, whose government has been repeatedly accused of rights abuses and has previously expelled other representatives of international bodies. Burundi has reported 27 coronavirus infections and one death. But there are suspicions the real situation could be worse. An animated video from Nigeria is teaching children about the coronavirus and having a global impact. VOA Salem Salomon recently spoke to Nigerian filmmaker Nia Akinemolian and has this report.
Educating children about something as complicated and frightening as the coronavirus is not easy. Nigerian filmmaker Nii Akimolayan decided to use the universal symbol of a big green cartoon monster with sharp teeth.
I'm going to play football with my friends, and there's nothing you can
say. Silence!
So there was a struggle to try and explain to my five-year-old what it meant for everyone to be on a lockdown. But beyond that was also to explain to them what the coronavirus was and how to get them washing their hands.
In a 93-second animated video, a young boy named Habib desperately wants to go out to play football. His older sister, Funke, warns him that because of the virus, playing with his friends is unsafe.
Mommy will be sick, no more jollof rice. Huh? Daddy will be sick, no more going out to see movies.
Oh no! Not the movies, no!
An uncertain Habib peeks out through the door to see a giant green coronavirus-shaped monster roaring.
Yes, you are.
See for yourself.
He slams the door, screaming.
Okay, it's real, it's real. What should we do?
The coronavirus is out there.
Akimolayan says he wanted to make the impact the virus is having to come alive for children, but also empower them to prevent it.
I kept failing at every logical attempt I made until I came up with the idea of the monster that was outside, and the monster would prevent you from going out to have fun. And I was like, the only way we're all going to beat this monster is by washing our hands. So I think when I had that exchange with him, that was the light bulb moment.
Akimolayan is a popular director whose film The Wedding Party 2 is the highest grossing movie in the history of Nigeria's film industry, nicknamed Nollywood. He's the founder and creative director of Ant Hill Studios, and his latest film, The Setup, is streaming on Netflix. He says he has collaborated with friends and co-workers on an animated project during the lockdown.
Then we're already working from home, and I said, hey guys, you know what's going to happen? I'm going to write a script, I'm going to do the voicing and all that, and we're going to voice it in all the four key languages in Nigeria, and then we're going to do an animation, and that's what we did.
He uploaded it to Google Drive and made it free to download and reuse on all social media platforms. In addition to the original four languages, English, Yoruba, Hausa, and Igbo, it has been translated into French, Swahili, and Portuguese. It aired in Nigeria and around the globe.
I actually get parents send me screenshots or videos and tell me that I have made their kids make them run out of soap. So parents are running out of soap because the kids, once they watch the film, even if they just come out of the shower, once they see the animation on TV, they go to pour more soap in their hands.
While he's grateful the video has reached faraway places, Akimolayan says he's most excited that it's had a positive effect on children. Salem Solomon, VOA News, Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baru, I thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the Sunny Side of Sports, Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.